Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Vicki, and Jay will sit down with Kevin Laurent, UK Senior Agricultural Extension Specialist. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Morning, Jay.
Have y'all learned anything new today?
Oh, my gosh.
I have.
We've solved more problems than you can shake a stick at this morning before the show ever started.
Yes, that's exactly right.
I've learned that there is an art to determining when to hit the record button.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to do it early for posterity reasons, and you collect all this grand information that needs to live on through time, and sometimes you need to leave it off.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
That is true. That is true, for sure.
Well, we've had some good weather for the past 10 days or 2 weeks
Yeah, lots of planting done, and on my way up here to recording in the beautiful Dixon again. We're back
in
our home studios, and, you know, on the way up here, a lot of corn planted, a lot of beans planted, and, you know, a lot of work being done and has been done. You know, I think we just come off a little bit of rain, and the ground looks a little damp in places as you come up through some of those bottoms. So, you know, we've had a really good run at it and got a lot done for sure.
Yep, we have. And you can start to see the rows now as you're driving by in your pickup truck. You can
a little yellow. Corn's a little bit yellow. Needs a little bit of warm weather would help.
That's
for sure.
Yeah.
I did go look at some beans for a fellow one day last week who was a little concerned. They were just starting to pop up out of the ground when we hit that cold weather. And they were pretty yellow, too. I asked him if we could have a week and come back and look at them again and see if they've made it. I've not heard from him, so I'm hoping they're still hanging
on. Well, I think I heard Chad say, you know, you need to get about 10 days to really be able to tell Dr. Chad Lee, or up at UK in Lexington, you know, talked about trying to take about 10 days to kind of let things kind of play out and see how things are going to go.
Right.
And we still got plenty of time to plant beans, you know.
You know, in that information that Dr. Lee sent out, he basically told us that corn, for the most part, should be okay. It's related to the growing point being below the ground, where beans, it's above the ground, and it may not come quite as well.
Yep. Usually never good on beans, and corn's usually okay. Yeah. So,
and just as a side note, of course, we're recording now like this. It's May the 2nd, and as David, you alluded to, some of the soils are still a little damp. So I know it's hard to stay off them fields when you're ready to go, but just keep in mind, sometimes you can just wait one day and it make a big difference.
Well, I got tickled this morning as I was coming up through here. One of the planters, as you're coming through Nebo, and there's a planter sitting on the left-hand side of the road, and it had lots of mud on it. So just be aware of that and be careful of that
That's right.
We had pretty good rains just a few days ago, and it looks like a bunch of rain coming in front of us, starting maybe Thursday through the next week. Good chance for rain every day. So it's that time of the year, Derby week, a lot of stuff getting done before those rains.
So get to plant your tomatoes on Saturday too.
Well, that's what I've always looked for, is get to that point. You know, as I know some people that have planted some tomatoes, and these 40-degree nights probably aren't great on them.
No.
I see a lot of buckets growing in gardens right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And flowers, too. Lots of people are planting flowers, probably.
Yeah. Even at that, though, it may slow them down and hold them back, but it shouldn't kill them. 40 degrees is still well above freezing.
Right. Yep.
Should be
especially if you got that bucket around them, they should be able to make it.
But putting off some heat of their own in the ground and everything else.
For sure.
Guest with us today, Kevin Laurent.
Retread.
Now officially, I guess, isn't it?
That's right.
I thought about that this morning.
Yep.
As close as Kevin is, and as long as we've been doing this show, looks like we'd already had him on twice now. But
well, we're trying to hold back because we know, you know, he can talk about so many different things, and we try to kind of spread it around as much as we possibly can. But you know, Kevin, you know, great contributor to things going on here in Kentucky for sure.
As involved as he is in so many different animal science related things, we could probably do a show with him once a month on a different topic every month.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I call him if I have a question about rations, or if I have a question about handling facilities, or a question about anything. Kevin's my go-to guy. So
absolutely,
he has helped me a lot as an agent, and I appreciate that. But I know he's helped other agents just as much as he has me and producers too. So glad you're with us, Kevin.
Yeah, glad to be here. I think I'll take that retread moniker as a term of endearment after all those kind words.
We only let a few people as a retread. You know, you make the cut on the retread, you're doing pretty good.
So what happens when you come back a third time?
We ain't never had that. Yet.
No, so, okay. We'll have to come up with another name for that. That's a different name. Yeah.
Maypop. we're glad to have you here. Of course, Kevin works out of the research center in Princeton, which is non-existent right now. Are you working out of a vehicle?
Well, it's not as we do have temporary facilities now.
Right,
we do have offices. We've got, I guess, two modular building complexes, so to speak. And we've got a copy machine on site. We've got a fax machine on site, and you know, we're functional.
It's a little difficult at time to figure out who's in which building.
No, it is, because there is two. Yeah, it's like eight single wide trailers put together, and that makes one module or one office A and office B. So it's a total of 16, if you will, you know, equivalent of 16 single wide type modules that. You know, eight in one building, eight in the other. But anyway, you got to figure out who's in office A complex, who's in office B complex. And then, of course, we've got the dirty labs, as they call them, which is where stuff comes directly out of the field, whether it be soil samples or plant material, whatever. And then I'm not sure what the status of the clean labs is at this time, whether, you know, I better stop there, because the lab part of it is not what I deal with. That's not part of my responsibility. So, I do know they're trying to get that, you know, all of that up and running. So, but the field work is going on at the station like usual. Cattle have been weaned. You know, calves have been weaned, and we hosted a grazing school last week. Had great attendance. I bet we had at least 40 people there.
That's awesome.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, it was a really good program, and so things and wheat field days on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it'll be on site, and then. And I think there's plans for the corn and soy deal. So, I think cat schools are going to have some of the cat schools there. I know those things move around a little bit. And then
we're going to host one of them at our office in Madisonville.
There you go. So, and then what is it? I think Dr. Leglider, I believe he's got maybe, again, I'm getting out of my area here, but I think his is kind of under that broad umbrella IPM, isn't that right? So I think he's got some IPM type.
I think he's doing. A spray school again.
I
think he's doing a spray school, and then they are also doing a pest management field day too this year. I think I don't know the exact date. I've got it written down. So, you know, it's nice to see that they're doing some things back at the station.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Is, you know, again, a lot of this is not in my area, but it's. As normal as things can be, it's not going to ever be normal like we always used. But I mean, things are we're having normal activities again, and that's,
things are starting to progress.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's, you know, even if you think back to when there was a facility there, even the old facility, it might have been the home base for a lot of things. But so many of you all work and carry out your programs other places anyway. So I know it's a little bit of a deterrent. You're not as efficient when you don't have that office and copying machine, fax machine, things like that. But the fact that you've still been able to hold programs and get things back up and going as quickly as you have is a testament to all of you, I think.
Well, I tell you, the fact that we've got good internet, that's probably the biggest plus. We can go to either A or B and have really good internet. And I think the internet might even be better than what we had before the storm.
We had a pipe freeze at our office back during Christmas, and we're just now wrapping up some of the construction. We had about a two-week time when we had to work remotely, which meant basically from home or a vehicle. You come in and out and get what you need. But internet was the biggest thing I miss whenever I try to do anything from home. A copy machine, you can go get that. You know, you can go make a copy somewhere.
And look, I don't know who's going to hear the podcast, whether the people that I'm going to compliment here, but I really want to thank area county offices for stepping up. Christian County and Caldwell County, especially Trigg County, those three especially. I know in my program, making copies, making getting catalogs together for sales or whatever, getting mailings out, you know, mm-hmm. just the fact to have a mail meter to get, I mean, all yeah. these things we take for granted.
Right.
And boy, I tell you what, those counties stepped up and just said, bring mm-hmm. it on. We'll run it through yeah. our deal and, and their support staff. I mean, it's, I can't say enough about
you know, that's a good thing about extension. You know, we always, you know, if there's something that needs to be done and you can't get it done in one county, you know, there's a lot of times another county will step up and say, yeah, we'll be glad to help you and do what we possibly can. But yep. I think I talked to Dr. Andy Bailey the other day, and he said maybe the new building was set for completion 2025 yeah, or something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, March of 2025 is what we got on the timeline. And you know how construction goes. You know, but it is nice to see we've got – there is a target. There's a date.
I mean, that's
wonderful. So.
No, absolutely.
Well, it just means progress, excuse me, is happening and plans are in place. And, you know, it's not going away. And I think that was the thing that – leadership was wanting to make sure that the research station, that it was going to be built back, because it is such a needed place there.
It's an integral part of what goes on in Western Kentucky.
It is, and the extension service, you know, and the research that's done there, and want to make sure that didn't just go away with the storm. And so it's glad to see that the plans are there.
Yep. Yeah, we had a lot of clientele and industry support throughout this whole deal, too. I mean, can't say enough about that.
Well, they were there on the front end with the
track
development and getting everything. When the building was originally remodeled and added on to, and they stepped right back up and came back when it was time to do it all again.
Well, they were there the day after the storm, too.
Right.
I was saying, you're right. It started back just the support we had to have to put the whole Grain Center of Excellence, that whole renovation. Mm-hmm. But then when the storm hit, area farmers coming out with equipment. Yeah. I mean, that's just – but isn't that just what we always see, though?
That's ice storm. Neighborly.
I mean, that's
just rural folks.
That
rural
is. That's folks. Just,
it is.
That's just being neighborly, and that's regardless of what you think of somebody, you're a good neighbor a lot of times.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, Kevin, tell us a little bit what you got going on, what's coming up in your world.
Well, I guess what's on the immediate horizon is our West Kentucky Select Bred Heifer Sale. It's scheduled for May 20th on a Saturday at 12 noon. We'll have probably about 225 bred heifers to calve in the fall. There'll be fall calving bred heifers, and anyone that is familiar with the West Kentucky sales, which those sales started back in 2000, and the spring calving sale, which is held in November, has been going on continuously since the year 2000, and I think it was about 05 or 06 we started the spring sale, if you will, the May sale for fall calving heifers, and it's been running continuously since then. So, it's a lot of our same familiar consigners. Quality wise, seems like the quality just gets better and better, and
as you would expect it to.
Right.
With a sale like
that. I think back of some of the excuse me, I was on the road all day yesterday, a little road weary, but screening heifers yesterday, and then thinking back, you know, when you got that road time by yourself and you're driving, I was thinking back some of those early sales. Screening was a lot harder job back then. It really was. Now it's not near as difficult, you know. Yeah. So the quality's in good shape, you know, as far as what we're gonna be offering. So
Kevin, you just mentioned that screening, and your eyes are on those cattle that's going to be in that. But for some of our listeners that, you know, they may not have ever participated in this, but just go kind of talk about the process to get your cattle into that bred heifer sale, because there's guidelines and there's restrictions and there's some loopholes and things. That's probably not the best word, but not loopholes, but some things that you're going to have to requirements you're going to have to meet. So why don't you just talk about that a little bit at the very beginning here?
Right. Well, I mean, first off, let me just tell you, I wish we could open it up to the world. I really do. I wish we could open it up to any producer that wanted in. That's not possible, because we would have way too many heifers to offer. Mm-hmm. I try my best to I won't say screen, but, you know, talk to folks who want to get in that sale. They usually have a 2 or 3 year wait to get in, and persistence pays. I think if they're persistent, and I like to visit with them, go to their farm, see what quality they've got, and try to work with them that way. There's a lot of expectations that go with being a consigner in this sale, and we've got a 30-day guarantee, right? That heifer's guaranteed to be bred 30 days past sale time. Every one of my consigners go way above and beyond that guarantee. Now, it may not be 100%, you know, reimbursement for problems and whatnot, and we take everything case by case. But we've got consigners that want folks to be successful with their purchases, and so that mindset is probably the most important requirement in my mind. It's not written in black and white, but it's what I try to ascertain when I'm talking to a potential consigner. This is a commitment. It's not just you're going to breed a set of heifers and we're going to sell them for, you know, for high money, right? I mean, it goes way above and beyond. It's a long-term commitment, really. You're wanting to provide quality seed stock for folks. And so that part's hard to explain, but it's probably the most important requirement I think we have as far as consigners go.
You have a regular set of people that come to this sale every year looking to buy heifers. And the improvement in quality through the years has helped to build that customer base. And really, it's that producer's customer base. It's not the sales customers, because they've helped build that by the quality of heifers that they put in it every year.
That's actually a very good point. I mean, you know, that, I think that's what sets this sale apart, and is part of, you know, we over years historically had a pretty good premium on these heifers, but I think that's what helps build that premium is not just the quality of heifers, but I think the what's behind those heifers in terms of support. And
you know, we've talked about it on this program before. You know, we started this bull sale, and the difference between starting a sale, Kevin, and having the sale with the history that you've got with this West Kentucky Select Bred Heifer sale is just second to none. And you can't be, when you're trying to start a sale, you can't be as selective as you can now with your sale. You can be very selective with your sale, and as far as choosing the heifers that go into this sale to provide to those customers some of the best quality genetics that you can possibly find in West Kentucky.
Right, and it's funny you bring that up, David, because I helped David a little bit. David took the lead, obviously, in that bull sale. And I kept telling him all along, I said, the first sale's the toughest.
Oh, man.
You can just get through the first sale. And then, and it was a successful sale. Mm-hmm. I thought the bull sale went really well in March. And and so that's good. I mean, I think you've definitely got something to build on then.
Yeah.
In fact, it was interesting. I was on one gentleman's farm yesterday that was in that bull sale.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to see the bull crop that's coming that would probably, some of those bulls might be in this sale the next year. So,
yeah.
But anyway, that's right. I mean, it's an interesting process. You got folks that want to sit back and watch and see if you're going to be successful, and then they want in. And then you got the folks who have been in it from the get-go and say, you know, I'm in. We'll just see what we got, you know. Yeah. We'll see what we can get started.
Sounds a lot like a CPH sale back in the late 80s.
Back in the day, that's right. We'll see if you get there. I know Dr. Burris used to tell that story about how some gentleman told him, said, well, now, Dr. Burris, you get that thing going, I'll be in there in a year
that's
or two.
Right.
You know, well, some folks got to be on that lead wagon, you know,
that's
taking
right,
a chance of getting the errors, you know. I mean, that's just part of, you know.
Yeah.
Being on the front line, if you will. So.
One of the things that I said when we was talking about the bull sale that you started, that I think one of the greatest things about that sale is it's a win-win on both sides of the table. Mm-hmm. So it's a positive thing for the buyers out there that are looking, and it's also a positive for the seller. And I think the bred heifers can be described exactly that same way.
Yep.
Because you've got the quality of those bred heifers for the producers that are looking to buy those, because they have, you know, they know that the requirements that there is to get into this sale. And so they're pretty confident that what they're getting is going to be high quality because of those things. And then on the flip side of that, that producer is also, you know, he's got an outlet to sell those good bred heifers. And so I think it's just a win-win for everybody.
Well, and I think it comes into price discovery too. There's a lot of heifers trade out in the country that are not in this sale that manage those cattle according to our requirements, which our requirements exceed even, you know, cost share requirements for whether it's Tennessee or Kentucky. But you know, so there's a lot of folks managing their cattle that way, using those good best management practices, and then they're trading cattle off the farm based on what that sale does. And I mean, and that's a value there. I don't even know if we can put a value on that. And I'm sure the bull sale is going to be the same thing once it gets established. Mm-hmm. And that bull sale gives, you know, we've got a lot of small purebred breeders who can't really play in, can't hold their own sale on the farm or can't, and it just gives them an outlet to sell, you know, one, two, three, four bulls off the farm and get them in front of a bigger crowd and that kind of thing.
Well, I said this back when we were talking about the bull sale that David had in March. It works the same way for the people purchasing these heifers or purchasing these bulls. They would never have enough time to cover the country to look at that type of selection to buy the two or three that they really need. And same way for the bulls and the heifers.
Those buyers know that they've been looked at. Mm-hmm. You know, you all know what's going to be in that sale because you've been around, you've looked at them. And, I mean, that's just, to me, I think if I was buying, I mean, that would just be a reassurance to me that, you know, this is worth the time to go up there and do it and look.
I haven't calculated this lately. I know two or three years ago, for whatever reason, I calculated what it's probably one of our success stories we all were required to write. But anyway.
If it's not, it's going to be.
It should be.
Something dawned on me. I wonder what our percentage of repeat buyers are. So I went back through the history, and I can't tell you. I'd have to look in my archives of success stories. But I think that repeat buyer rate is in that 60 to 70%.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Is repeat buyers. So I think that's a pretty good figure. I don't know. I'm not in the business world. I don't know how an advertising or marketing firm would see that. You know, I don't know how you evaluate that figure.
If nothing else.
But it sounded pretty good to me.
If nothing else, it says that you didn't sell them a bad product or they wouldn't have come back
exactly,
at all.
Exactly, right. So,
you know, and the good thing about this sale is there are a lot of times, Kevin, where if somebody I just need a couple of heifers. I don't need five. I don't need 10, you know.
Right.
This sale, there are times that there are a couple of heifers in a pen.
Well, and I'm going to pick on you or use you as an example, if you will. So if you've got 25 heifers at home that you've just bred, do you really want to deal with somebody down the road that wants, hey, David, can I come pick out two of those heifers out of your 25? Yeah.
No.
Because the practicality, you would think on the surface, man, that's not that big a deal. No, it is a big deal. Because now, you know what? How do you establish price? How do you do? Mm-hmm. So that's actually a very good point. You can come to this sale, and we'll have them busted up, and we'll even have a single or two, you know, from one to five. We usually don't try to go over five in a lot. And so there'll be lots of twos and threes. Mm-hmm. That's a real good point. And then, you can just look in the catalog out what flavor you want, what kind of heifer you want, what kind of breeding date you want, and select that. It's a whole lot easier to do than, say, going to David's farm. You got 25 heifers, and you're going to try to pick two out of there? Mm-hmm. How do y'all going to decide which two go?
Yeah.
That gets into some awkward, sticky situations, from that standpoint.
And two, I know I've got some farm kids, we'll call them, that have started their own herds, and that's the way they're starting their herd is buying bred heifers. And, you know, that gives them the opportunity at this sale as well. If you're, that they can go in there and buy a bred heifer and to be able to start her, like you're saying, they may just be wanting to buy one or maybe wanting to buy two. And there's folks like that can buy at that sale too.
Well, and the good thing about this sale is there are a lot, the majority of them are broke up into, different sale lots, but most of them are either bred to the same bull or maybe they're out of the particular bull. Some of them are AI, some are not, some are natural bred. So, I mean, you can kind of get whatever kind of like flavor or whatever, suits your calving. Window, whatever.
What's best going to fit into your herd at home?
Exactly. So there's lots of, and having that many heifers, you have that opportunity to have that kind of that selection of different things that are going on that you can pick from.
Well, and it kind of jump even further. You're talking about the kids. What I like about the sale, how we've done it, and I wish I could say I'm going to give the stockyard credit for this. But I think our auctioneer is about one of the most farmer-friendly auctioneers.
Yeah.
So it's not, and not to pick on the purebred sales, but, some of our purebred sales, you've got the ring men around the side, and it gets to be a little bit high pressure and a lot of bid taking and hollering and carrying on. Our auctioneer is a good auctioneer. He's a professional auctioneer. That's how he makes his living. But what I like about him is he'll slow down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't ever worry about being run. You know that he's taking you, pulling stuff out of the air. And, you know, he'll slow down and make sure everybody's on board and knows where we're at on the bid. Not, I call it a farmer-friendly sale. You may even call it a kid-friendly sale.
Yeah.
I, you know, a young person could come to that sale and sit down, and Mr. Cordy would
– lots
would,
of confidence he'd do
that
them right.
He would do them right.
Confidence was the word I was waiting to use. That's going to give confidence to that buyer.
And me and David go back to some – some, well, we'll just say it, show pig sales back in the day. We've seen some auctions, and we've seen some things happen.
Not very kid-friendly.
Exactly.
And I tell you what else I've seen, and I've seen the same auctioneer one day working for one firm was completely different working at the next farm the next day. It was a different kind of a sale, very family-friendly. The second sale was very family-friendly and slowed down, and everything
that's
was
interesting.
You know, and I can remember the people getting the bid and saying to the owner of the place, pick me a pig.
Right.
You know, and so that's how family-friendly that deal
that
was
deal
the next
was,
day.
Yeah.
The night before is a different ballgame,
right,
boys.
Right, and you I'm gotta, sorry I kind of paid him with a broad brush there, but I'm going back to some of our running
adventures.
Yeah. But now, but I like how Kent, our auctioneer, does it. He's does a good job.
Well, when you talk about breeding and with the bred heifers and the breeding season, and I know that you've had a lot of experience with a lot of different producers, not necessarily ones that's in this sale, but you know, what are some of the common mistakes that producers are making on getting their cattle ready for breeding season?
Okay, great question. Whether you're buying bred heifers, raising your own bred heifers, whatever the case may be, I think it starts with when that calf is born. There's lots of research. Dr. Anderson, Les Anderson, our repro guy, he really pushes this, and there's lots of research to back it up. Cattle born in the first 21 days or the beginning of the breeding season, heifers born in that time period are going to breed earlier, and they're going to stay in the herd. And I mean, it's almost like it's programmed. Let's say you start calving 1st of February, those heifers born in February will have a whole lot better chance of breeding early, them calving in, say, February, and them staying, breeding back and staying current in their reproductive cycle for their lifetime, as opposed to ones in that same herd that may be calving in, that may have been born in March. And it's kind of interesting to see that. I mean, I don't, you know, because you kind of say, you know, textbook-wise, you say that fertility is lowly heritable. But if you look at the numbers on some of that research, it's pretty impressive how true that holds. You know, so born early, and breed back early and stay in the herd. I mean, it's that simple. So, you know, that's where it starts. And then... So I would, you know, if I'm on the farm and selecting my own, I would be looking at that first 21 days, so to speak. And then after you select those heifers, you know, making sure they develop in the right way. And you know, there's been some research to kind of counter that a little bit. Most of it's been out west in range conditions where, you know, our old rule of thumb is 60% of body weight at breeding time, right? And so... And so, or I guess it's 2/3 2/3 of mature weight. So you want a heifer to be before breeding season, that first breeding season. Now, there's been some research to show, well, maybe we can get by with about 55% of mature weight. And some of that research has been done. And you'll say, well, I'm gonna rough these heifers, and then the ones who breed are gonna be the tough ones, right? And some of that holds true in some of those range conditions. What's interesting is that. Dr. Lim Cooler, Jeff Lim Cooler, our nutritionist, one of our nutrition specialists there, and Les Anderson looked at a lot of data in our part of the world in Kentucky conditions that doesn't hold up. So our 2/3 of mature body weight is still what we want to tell folks. So get that heifer grown and developed. You don't want to get her over fat, but usually it's a case of that 1.5 to 2 pounds of daily gain from, say, weaning until breeding time will probably get you there, you know. And so that's, you know, you don't want to push them like you would, say, a preconditioned feeder calf, you know, 2.5 to 3 or something, you know, and get them a little fleshy. That's probably not you know, very, but that 1.5 to 2 pounds in most cases of average daily gain from weaning to breeding is probably a get you to about that 2/3 of mature size. So,
Kevin, talk about how important it is to get, number one, to get bred early, get them calved maybe a little bit before your cows start, you know, just from a labor standpoint even, and how important that is to get her on her way to getting bred back on time.
Right, and that kind of goes hand in hand with the first part about that heifer being programmed. If we can get those heifers to breed a little bit ahead of the cow herd, ideally, that's even better, because now we're giving that heifer a little extra time. You remember, man, when she calves for that first time, she's nursing the calf, and she's growing. Her body is still growing, okay, until she's at least 3+ years old, right? So she's trying to grow her own body, feed that calf, and then breed back. Well, of those three things, breeding back, Mother Nature puts breeding back as number three on the priority list, right? Okay? You know, number one, that calf's got to get fed, and then number two, she's got to, you know, keep herself going. Number three is, let's not start this stuff all over again if you're in a marginal situation. Now, that's how Mother Nature fixes that, you know. Yeah. We're going to survive. We're going to take care of what's there and living and breathing at the moment. We don't need to start calf number two if things are marginal, right? So if we can give that cow a little more time to recover from, and her postpartum interval might be a little longer. Most of the time it is. So we're giving her a little extra time to catch up and get going. You couple that with a good nutrition program, and you, you'll have a lot better chance of success getting her bred back, you know.
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, even, you know, getting her calved is not the end of the deal for a bred heifer right. On the first calf. You know, you want to try to give her nutritional plane needs to be higher than those cows that are out there with the rest of the herd. So, you know, that's why we try to separate, and I tell people, you know, have them separate from your cow herd, and then you're able to feed them.
Right.
You know, obviously most of the hay in our part of the country here is not the only thing you'll need to feed her to get her nutritional plane up to the level it needs to be.
Right. That's right. And of course, we could go on down a whole nother rabbit trail on testing hay and nutrition, but right. I'm going to tell you, you know, again, you can read a lot of stuff on the internet, and you can see a lot of stuff, and you can say, well, I'm a forage-only operation. My cattle are only going to – I'm going to raise my cattle on fescue and fresh air, and that's fine, you know, and I love fescue. I mean, you know, but and that's what we have. However, some strategic supplementation is not the devil, okay? I mean, and I know feed is $300 a ton, but if you target some strategic supplementation where we need it, And the case you just illustrated is exactly what we need. I mean, we've got some first calf heifers. Mm-hmm. You've done everything you've done to get them to that point. By gosh, spend a little money on some feed for 30 days or so. Yep. And that's probably all you would need, some supplement in that 30-day period to get them to new grass, get them over the hump, get them over that last hurdle.
Yep.
And that's going to be money well spent long term, because we want this heifer to get back in, breed back, stay in the herd, and be in the herd, you know,
that whole
6 to 10 years.
That whole stayability deal is a big deal. When you're giving $2,100 for a heifer, you want her to stay around for a while.
Absolutely.
Sure. And that nutritional deal is so important for her to stay in the herd, you know, as we move on down through the years. So.
Right.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, just when I came to work here as an extension agent, of course, you know, everybody knows I'm more on the grain side, as Kevin, you know, he's kind of grain girl over here. I'm the grain girl over here. But, you know, one of the things that I learned really quick, you know, after becoming the extension agent here, was that rations are not a one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the same farm, you know, it's a lot more to that. Yeah. And knowing what that stage of production is, knowing what the quality of
the hay testing thing is just important.
And I mean, we all know that, and even Grain Girl over here knows that, but that's a hard sell to make sometimes.
Right.
And I don't know if it's just because it's one of those out of sight, out of mind things, and you intend to do it. The intentions are there to start testing the hay, but then it doesn't happen, and then it's time to start feeding, and it's not been tested, and it's just in that cycle. But just making those changes as the herd changes, And being able to implement those, though, is going to make you money at the end of this. It's going to make you some money.
All right, absolutely. I'm getting off on a little bit of a tangent, but I noticed driving up here, there were some folks down the road cutting wheatledge, it looked like. Yep. And I feel like I'm getting more phone calls on wheatledge and maybe some of these cover crops, cereal rye, haylage, and those kind of things. And just because you put it in a bag and it's haylage or wheatledge doesn't necessarily make it better, but it does give folks an opportunity to capture that stuff at the right stage of maturity as opposed to hay that we're going to feed them in, that we cut the 4th of July, right? We get all that tonnage, but we just have a lot of tonnage, right?
But there's
so knowing what you've got and testing that and then, again, strategically, you may not have to supplement that first calf heifer. Mm-hmm. Chances are you probably will, but you may not have to if you put up, some early cut forage or whatever. But
there's some different management practices that you have to deal with when you're cutting and having haylage and baleage and different things of this nature. It's a great quality forage, and Dr. Teutsch will tell you, that's kind of what he's all about, is getting that great quality forage out to those cows. It's really important. Kevin, discuss a little bit, in the time we've got left, maybe a little bit about the genetic change that you've seen over the years in the bred heifer sale. I mean, we've got, from 2000 till now, what are some of the genetic improvements that you've seen as we've come along?
Well, I mean, that's a broad question. In general, I'll try to answer it with a broad general statement and maybe give a few examples. So I'd say in general, I think the cattle have gotten better. Now, what does that mean? Well, it does make it makes the screening go better. Our consigners are doing a better job. They're using better bulls. We've got more body in these heifers. We've got more volume in these heifers. We've got a lot of the consigners are now offering crossbred heifers. And I know Dr. Bullock, Dare Bullock would be all over, that. And that's the best place we can put maternal heterosis on the cow side, having that crossbred cow. That's where we get the most bang for our buck. You talk about stability. That's the best thing you can do for keeping a cow in the herd, is if she's crossbred and she's got some hybrid vigor, so that has been something that has trended this way. We've had some feet problems over the years, and a lot of it was coming out of the Angus breed, just put it bluntly. I mean, all breeds have foot trouble, but credit Angus breed, they've got a foot BPD. I'm not saying the EPD is working that quick. That's not. But the fact that they came up with a foot EPD, a foot, and that's make those breeders focus on that. See, so now that they're focused on it, they're doing a better job. So I'm not screening near as many out for feet like we used to.
5 years, we should see some headway made towards it.
Exactly, and then that should get better. Should get better.
Just takes a little time.
Right.
Well, you've got to start somewhere.
I was going to say, credit them for starting it, because you're not going to change it if you don't start it.
That's right. And then Dr. Bullock would support this too. But one change we made several years ago is requiring all our service sires to be genomic and have genomic enhanced EPDs. And if you ever hear him talk about it, so having the DNA pulled and the genomic test done, it's the same as raising that accuracy, say from that 8 or 10% range with yearling bulls with no records, of progeny have, to, 30-35% accuracy. And it's the same as having, I think, different traits, different numbers, but I think in that 20 to 30 calving records.
Yeah.
Just by a DNA test. So when that bull is born, we can pull DNA and have enough information on it as if that bull had already sired and had records turned in, for calving ease to the tune of 20, 25 calves. That's mind-boggling, right. So you just jump 3 years, probably at least 3 years ahead. And so that has been implemented, and I think it's made our prediction. I think we have less calls on calving ease trouble now that we've coupled that. Added that requirement. And I know that's a requirement on your bull sale.
Yep.
Trying to get it to be a universal requirement. I know you tried your best this first time, but I think that's going to be a universal requirement to have these genomic enhanced EPDs.
I think some folks had some genomic tests pulled on them and were quite shocked with the results.
Right.
So that was a learning experience for the for the you know, folks that were selling. So I think it's another great thing. Kevin, go over with us real quick the date, time, and all the kind of that general information about your sale.
Yeah, it'll be Saturday, May 20th. Start at 12 noon. We're going to bring these heifers in on Friday, put them through the chute one more time, try to go over them again, make sure we didn't miss anything, preg check them again on Friday. They will stay in their home pens, I like to call it, with their own, you know, their home group overnight on hay and water. And then the next morning, the stockyard will put them into their sale pens. And we try to get the cattle in the sale pens by 9 Saturday morning. And then so they're, you know, you're welcome to come out anytime after 9 and look at them in their sale pens. And then we'll start to sale at noon. Now, cattle can stay overnight if you need to haul them the next day. So we can, you know, you can do that. But I guess I want to back up and say all of this can be found on www.kyheifersale.com is the webpage.
We'll put that in our notes, too, on our, on our podcast.
That'd be great. And we're updating. There's not much there to look at now. But hopefully by the end of this upcoming weekend, we're going to have a lot of stuff to look at there in terms of pictures, videos, and some information on the heifers. You know, folks can start looking at it then. You know. So
when this airs, it should for sure be up.
Right. So it'll be on air on the 15th, so all this will be up by the time then.
Great.
So that'll air on the Monday before the sale on Saturday.
Yeah, hopefully, and I'm glad y'all to jump ahead. It reminds me. So what I try to do, we've got a email list that you can go on that webpage and click on to get put on the email list, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're on the email list, you're going to get updates, you know, reminders, hey, we've got new pictures up and so on. But the best thing is we're going to have a draft of that, of the sale order, hopefully that Wednesday before. I always shoot for the Wednesday before that Saturday to have a draft of the sale order posted, sent out to the email list, plus it will get posted to the webpage. So they can download it and look at it.
And that's not the final, but it is. It gives you a really good idea what's going to be there.
Yeah, because we'll check them. We'll probably cull 8 or 10. You know, out of 200 plus heifers, we'll probably. There'll probably be 8 or 10 culled, you know, when we check them one more time, you know. And so that'll adjust a little bit of the sale order, but it'll be pretty much 90% what it's going to be, right?
Yep.
I'll just throw in there, too, I'm not sure who all is listening and where they're listening, but we are on Central Time. So when he says 12 noon, that is on Central Time Zone.
Yes, yes. And I've got that on all my flyers, but it never hurts to remind folks. Yep. You're right.
I think
an advertisement went out in – purchase area that had the sale at 7 o'clock. So let's make sure it's 12 noon, Saturday 12 noon, Central Time. There you go.
And if you got any questions, you can call, you know, Kentucky Tennessee Livestock Market. They've got some folks there can help you if you are interested in bidding. I know Mr. Mark Barnett does a lot of bidding for other folks, and he'd be glad to try to help you out. He and his team will be glad to help you out there, too.
And again, that's handled with the utmost integrity. I mean, again, just great folks to work for. Great auctioneer. I mean, it's about as buyer friendly sale, I guess, as I've been around.
Speaking of Mark Barnett, he's going to be a guest on this show here in the next couple of weeks.
He is.
Be sure if you want to hear anything about the Livestock Marketing Association, tune back in and listen for that. So
he's the national president. Right?
That's right. David got that pulled for us. So.
That's good.
Celebrity.
That's good.
Celebrity.
It's good to know people, isn't it?
That's right.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
When you need them. You know, we always wrap the show up with a timely tip, and with all the talk we've talked about preparing for the bred heifer sale or just the importance of breeding your heifers on the farm, this week's timely tip is to get those heifers bred up early in your breeding season. Kevin actually touched on some research that they've looked at here in the state that shows breeding them early will bring that early calf, it'll bring that early breed back, and add to their longevity in the herd. So anything you want to add to that?
I think you got it covered. I'm just glad to be here. It's always great to visit with my three good friends here. So.
We're glad to have you. You always add something good to it. So. Right. Special thanks to Kevin again for being our guest and to the host for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and will make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.